Welcome back to the SBS Sports Talk Show, presented by the Sports Business Society at UVA. I'm Michael Rockless, along with my co-host, Mike Popper, and as always, our producer, Will Harden. This week, we have a double Who's That segment.
Who's That?
With Stephen Green, we're going to be talking some World Cup qualifying and get into some NFL with him, and we have our other segments as usual. Make sure you listen to this at 1.5 times speed. Hit it.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows. Football, tennis, hockey, golf.
So we're going to keep it short and sweet this week. We're going to start with our read option. Mike, got a read for me.
Yeah, I do, and it's a pretty good read for me. SI.com article about Isaiah Thomas. It's called Best Year of My Career, Worst Year of My Life. And that kind of speaks to the kind of up and down year Isaiah Thomas has had. You know, played incredibly well during the season, had the terrible tragedy in the postseason, then the hip injury, and then Danny Ainge trades him. And, you know, probably the biggest thing out of here is how he doesn't blame the Celtics. He doesn't blame Brad Stevens. He doesn't blame any of the players. But he does say that he will never talk to Danny Ainge again in his life. He is certain of that.
That's pretty harsh. You know, Isaiah Thomas kind of an interesting case. We've talked about this trade before. But he was really that just big-time hero in Boston. And, you know, I was kind of a big proponent all along of it didn't make sense for them to keep him long-term. So, you know, for him to go out in this way is a little bit surprising, because even in the trade to a rival, that's the Celtics' biggest competitor in Cleveland, it still seems like Boston fans are pretty receptive to supporting IT.
I think the other biggest thing is, you know, they didn't trade him to a place where, you know, it's going to be easy for him to make money either. You know, he could have gone to gotten traded to the Magic or the Nets or somebody, and they would have re-signed him long-term deal pretty much no problem. But instead they trade him to the Cavs, where he's gonna have trouble being re-signed. Exactly. He's the third option, and he's never gonna be able to get a long-term deal there.
Yeah, I think the hip injury for him is also an issue, but I don't know. I think I personally think they did him a solid. They gave him a chance to play with LeBron. And honestly, the comeuppance for him will probably be a little bit sweeter, because I think they're going to take out Boston in that Eastern Conference Finals. That's what seems likely to me at this point. But it's just kind of an interesting trade, which we've hit on before. Just when you have the two biggest competitors in the same conference making an absolute blockbuster deal involving, you know, of the teams, you know, three best players each. They, you know, they really traded some high quality guys. So it's just kind of an interesting move, and tough to see IT go out on a tough note, you know, for someone who's kind of had this remarkable trajectory to stardom.
Yeah, and you hope that he comes back at the same, you know, level he was at. Maybe that gives the Cavs a chance to fight with the Warriors for that championship. But what do you got for me this week, Mike?
Yeah, I have this article from 247sports.com. It says, and this is from Mel Kiper. He said, Bronco Mendenhall, UVA's own Bronco Mendenhall, is the most underrated coach in college football. I'm loving it
because, I mean, we all know Mel Kiper has never been wrong before.
No, Mel Kiper is the go-to sports personality. Just, you know, hey, dot, you know, he's always right. You know, he's got the draft thing on lock, so he obviously watches a lot of film, a lot of college football. You know,
that makes him knowledgeable.
Yeah, and I trust his opinion on this one. It works for me. The Hoos, big win against Duke this week. The bowl game's looking real good.
That scent is getting stronger, Mike.
Yeah.
That Rankin scent is getting stronger.
Yeah, we play at UNC this weekend on Saturday.
That's an easy win.
And we're favored. We're road favorites. I mean,
when's the last time we've been road favorites?
Probably not in our time here. It's really remarkable. You look at the schedule coming up. I mean, this is a team that can win some games and really get on the right track. And the thing about Mendenhall, Bronco, as we affectionately call him here at UVA, which Mel Kiper noted, is that at BYU, he turned the team around from a middling team, and they went to a bowl game every year. And now that he's left, they were fine last year, which with, you know, his players.
Right.
I think they're like something like 1-5 this week. Will, you can stat check us on that one, or Mike, someone. But I mean, that's just kind of incredible that Bronco has – the loss of him seems like it's been pretty valuable in the wrong way for BYU, and the gain of him seems pretty good for UVA.
I mean, yeah, and you know, that's what I've always kind of said was – you know, let him get his players into the program, because he was playing with Mike London's players last year.
I don't even know if he has that now, though. But
I think he's started. It started, and you know what is BYU?
BYU is 1-5. They won the opener, and they're on a 5-game losing streak.
Thanks, Will.
No Bronco, no winning.
Hey, you know that's a catchy slogan right there.
It almost rhymes.
It almost rhymes. But yeah, so basically, when you let him get his players and instill his culture into the team, I think this is kind of the result we were all hoping for, we were all expecting, and you know, credit to the UVA athletic program for getting him in here, and you know, credit to Bronco for turning this team around and actually making me excited to go to games.
Yeah, hopefully they can keep this up. We're cheering you on, UVA football. It's been some great stuff this year, some big time wins. All right, so we're going to transition into our drop the mic for this week. I'm going to start, and I'm pleading. I'm hoping for my local team, not my favorite team, but my local team, the Washington Nationals. Please, just this one time, please give us a Game 5 win. Please. I mean, this has gone on way too long. They've been among the best teams in the MLB since 2012, and they've had just heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak in the playoffs, have not escaped that first round. I've been to a couple of the games. Never seen them win in the playoffs, and it's just it's time for them. They play tonight. This release Thursday, so they play tonight against the Cubs. Tonight is the night they flip the page. They turn the corner, over the hump. Give me something, please.
I don't know, man. Let the listeners know what I'm doing over here, Mike.
He's got the choke hands.
It's a consistent DC sports theme.
Yep. No semifinals in it for a DC team since, I believe, 2000 or 2001. It's been a long time.
That trend will continue.
So you're picking Cubs.
I am picking Cubs in 5. Like, yeah. I've always said, Cubs in 5.
Yeah, I'm just hoping at this point they, you know, in Nationals fashion, they keep it tight. They keep it interesting. They make you think they have a chance. But now is the time for them. We mentioned this last week when we had Daniel on and we're talking about baseball, is that their narrative has really become that team that's really good but can't escape in the first round in the playoffs. And at some point, that's got to change, or else it's going to almost become like a permanent thing. So this is the year I'm pleading, Nationals, just give me one game. Get into the semifinals.
Pitching? Who's pitching?
So for the Cubs, Will, you can also check us on this. I believe it's Hendricks who started Game 1. For the Nationals, they used Strasburg in today's game.
Right, I saw that.
Because originally Dusty messed something up and he wasn't going to be able to pitch something like that. He had the flu, the mold in Chicago, who knows. They had the rain out. Yesterday, so then Strasburg kind of came in and said, I'm feeling good today, pitched a gem, no runs. But they can't really pitch Scherzer. He pitched really well on, I guess it was Tuesday, but
that's
only
3 days rest.
It's Wednesday, Tuesday, or
2 days rest.
2 days rest, so you can't really, I don't know, yeah, 2 days rest, so you can't really go to him. I think it'll be Gio Gonzalez for the Nats on short rest. But then you got to do what you got to do, so the Cubs may be a little bit more fresh with their guys, but big game. It'll be a really fun baseball game to watch.
I'm rooting for the Cubs there.
Yeah, that's sad. It's same time as a big Thursday night football game, which we'll get to later. So I'm excited for those to come on. All right, Mike, we got a good one with you. Your squad.
My squad is blowing up the news right now. Dominique Rogers Cromartie allegedly. So here's what it first came out, that he left the team practice today. Then it came out that he actually got suspended for half a day.
That was it?
Half got suspended.
Good job, Ben McAdoo.
Suspended for the rest of the day.
You
got sent home early from school and for getting in an altercation with Ben McAdoo. So apparently at halftime in the Chargers game, Cromartie took his pads off, almost got into a fight with a player in the locker room, an unnamed player. Then hurt himself on a play on a deep ball, right? McAdoo pulls him because he's hurt. Then some altercation happens there. The altercation spills over Monday, Tuesday into Wednesday practice today. He goes into McAdoo's office. They get into another altercation. Altercation is the word used by Landon Collins. So that's why, you know, we got a little inside scoop there. But yeah, it's just unbelievable. And at this point, you know, we talked about this in our class, but I'm just rooting for things to just go as south as possible, because I need McAdoo out of there and I need Reese out of there. Because if we're going to get a top 5 pick, I need to be, you know, able to trust the dude that's making that pick.
Yeah, the Giants are in complete shambles. You love to see it for a season. You know, even as you're a Giants fan, obviously. Yeah, I think you can deal with it for one season. I mean, you've committed. This was one of my big predictions at the beginning of the year, was that we're going to see teams embrace the tank. The Giants, I don't think they really fit into that category. Definitely was not on our minds or my mind when I said that. But this is a team I think their fans maybe can accept it for 1 year. I mean,
bring it on. I'm embracing it. You yeah, know, I'd love to see a Saquon Barkley in a Giants uniform.
I wouldn't, but I'd love it. I mean, they're at this point, they're in complete shambles. Who would have thought that Dougie P's emerging as the best coach in the NFC East? Ben McAdoo, just no good.
No good. But I mean, talking about shambles, let's go into our first topic here.
Who's that?
Who's that of the week? Stephen Green, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
If I say the word shambles, what U.S. or what U.S. team comes to mind?
I mean, it was just embarrassing. They had 10 games, 5 home, 5 away, and they'd scraped 12 points out. And obviously, heartbreak on the last day. I think the stat was ESPN gave them a 92% chance to qualify.
93, I think.
93. And they just dropped the ball. And Bruce Arena's got to be in the hot seat, even though he's only been there for a few months now.
That's a UVA guy. We support UVA guys on this podcast.
I'm not supporting him. If you can't qualify in CONCACAF, there's a problem.
I mean, this dude, they looked... I watched the game. They looked flat. The only person I saw giving any effort was, you know, the god Pulisic. But Dempsey came on at half and was the only other player I saw that really wanted it. And, you know, you would think that with a tie essentially ensuring them getting into the World Cup, that they would, you know, at least show a little fight. But it kind of goes back to, do you think that they just expected to Costa Rica and Mexico to win or a draw?
I mean, the way I look at it is the team just had no identity. And they're rallying behind Christian Pulisic, who's obviously has a chance to be a superstar, obviously starting Champions League in Dortmund, and he's looked really well. And with the departure of Ousmane Dembele to Barcelona, he'll really have that role to shine.
Right.
But at the same time, even when Lionel Messi was that age, the team wasn't specifically built around him. It was built around the team. And I think Bruce Arena has made some tactical mishaps in creating the identity. And it really shows with the lack of heart and effort they played with outside of Pulisic and Dempsey, as you mentioned.
Right. And I think you can even boil it down just to U.S. soccer, the federation in general, mm-hmm. and how they've decided to build their youth programs. There's a lack of continuity that you see in other, you know, European federations that, you know, they start them young and they have, you know, clubs, and but it's not pay to play. And that's the biggest thing that U.S. soccer doesn't have, is you need to have money to be able to play soccer at the club level when you're the youth. And that's not the best way to get the best players.
Yeah, youth development is really different in soccer as compared to other sports, especially in America. When we look at football, basketball, it's really AAU, high school, college, and that's how you get to it. Where soccer, you need to be working with kids when they're 4 or 5,
right,
and really develop them, because there's such a technical aspect of the game. And it's also something that's very mental, and you need to learn it as you grow.
I have a question for you guys. I'm going to butt in here on the soccer conversation. So we get to 2018. We're going to be in the summer. I guess World Cup starts in, what, June or something like that. So what are all of these phony soccer American soccer fans going to do for 3 weeks during the World Cup with no team? Are we supporting? Who are you guys supporting? Take a team? Pick a team?
I mean, so first to comment on that, I think it's a huge issue, because soccer had been gaining momentum after the 2014 World Cup. You know, the MLS has been growing. It's not huge, but it's been growing in popularity, and that's what you need. You need constant growth, and this could really set soccer back just in general.
What a shame. What a shame.
Mike, you know, we don't agree on much, and I'm a little frustrated with that comment, because, you know, you should be rooting against the growth of a sport in general.
Well, it has nothing to do with, it's not like a personal thing. It's
as much of a sport guy as you are, shouldn't you want all sports to succeed?
I do, but I think there becomes a saturation of the players where I don't want our best athletes playing soccer. I want them playing the sports that selfishly that I enjoy, which honestly, where we have the bigger advantages, basketball, football, even baseball. That's where I want to see our athletes go. Those are the sports I enjoy. So soccer losing some momentum at the cost of, you know, some national pride. I think I'm definitely more on the side of I'm willing to take the hit. But Steve, is there any remedy for the World Cup? I mean, if you're a casual soccer fan at most, how much does this, in your opinion, sap the interest of for the casual American fan.
Sure. So obviously the U.S. naturally draws some interest, but in years past, they're just not a force in world football, and that's something that definitely needs to be taken into consideration. And I almost think that the style that they play is unattractive.
I agree. And
if you get a casual sports fan to watch teams that have a good system, that have good players and continuity with coaches and really the system, I think it's just much more interesting from a tactical and also a physical perspective.
Yeah, I agree with that. The long ball approach that U.S. soccer has played is just ugly. And, you know, it's not the way football, soccer is
played. It's what Van Gaal played with the Netherlands in the 2014. It got them to the semis, and obviously they had a lot better players, including Van Persie and Robin, who at the time were two of Europe's premier attackers.
Yeah.
But the U.S. just doesn't have the talent up front, and they really don't have any capable midfielders to get
right.
the ball moving.
So to answer your point about who's the U.S. going to support?
Yeah, who are you picking up?
I mean, you know, I'm going to go with the underdog, the Cinderella story, Iceland.
Are they in it?
They are in it.
Okay, cool.
Smallest nation ever to qualify.
You want to know, I heard, this is taken from an ESPN rant.
How much smaller are they than the United States?
They are the size of Corpus Christi, Texas.
Well, Corpus Christi?
Tiny.
Tiny beach town. From our resident Texas expert. So a little country like that. And I remember they had some success in whatever the European.
They knocked out in the round of 16, which was incredible.
Yeah, so they've had some success. They're probably a better team than us. I mean, how
embarrassing. They are a better team.
Professor Gertsen's a top player in Europe.
Okay, so that's a real team. It's kind of
is a real team.
It's embarrassing that a team like that's better. I love just abbreviating Trinidad and Tobago to TNT beat the U.S. men's national team the other night there. A little TNT. But Steve, who are you picking up with?
Yeah, so obviously going away from CONCACAF and moving to the South American qualifiers, Lionel Messi's performance last night against Ecuador, scoring a hat trick with barely any touches on the ball, and a truly shambolic performance from the other 10 players on the pitch. I mean, how would you not want to see him go out in potentially his last World Cup with a win? He came so close in 2014, losing to Germany, because Gonzalo Higuain's a bottler at the top level. And, I mean, Messi is honestly one of the most unlucky players in the game. He's carried that team to the finals.
Yeah,
he's carried them to qualify, and it's a feat that they're even in it.
He just can't seem to shake the ghost of the national team and that lack of championship. And it's annoying because, you know, that's what people that say, like, you know, he's not the greatest of all time, they point to that, and you're like, man, do you even watch this guy play?
Yeah, so
it's unbelievable.
We can visit this Maradona Messi controversy, which is really just a dumbfounded argument if you look at the heart of it. People claim that because Maradona won the World Cup that he's a superior player than Lionel. But Messi has accomplished so much more at the club level in an era when soccer or European football is just so much better.
Right.
And he literally was the sole reason that they even made the finals. And he just dragged them. The system was terrible. The players are awful. Di Maria, I don't know how he's in the starting 11.
He's
embarrassing. I mean, they have Paulo Dybala, who obviously plays a very similar role, left footer. He likes to come in and move the ball. And Higuain's not even made the rosters, but I mean, their midfielder, you can't even rate any of the players. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, so I can't guarantee that we're going to get back to soccer before the World Cup starts on this podcast. We're not making any guarantees here. So before we transition back to some American sports here, give me a couple other quickly, maybe two teams each that you're also looking out for to be successful, maybe another underdog that you'll be interested in the World Cup. Mike, you can start, and Steve, you can give us the last two, and we'll switch.
All right, I'm going to stay in the Eastern Hemisphere with the Ticos of Costa Rica. I'm a big fan of the Ticos. And look out for James Rodriguez playing well on Colombia in their qualifiers. I've always been a fan of Colombia. They got Cuadrado up front, the speedster.
The Quadrominator.
those are the two teams to watch for me.
Yeah, so I think there's two potentially interesting teams that really have a chance of winning it. One is Portugal, obviously coming off the Euros. I mean, their team's young, and as although Ronaldo is a little, he's definitely on the decline, just the veteran presence he brings, and his ability to stretch the back line's huge. And then, I mean, they just have so many great young players in the pipeline, and I think that winning the Euros really solidified their chance. But also, this France team is just loaded with great players. I mean, Ousmane Dembele, Kylian Mbappe, Lamar, all up front. And then
I haven't heard of a single one of those guys.
You bring in the veteran presence of an Olivier Giroud, and obviously the emerging star at Barcelona, Samuel Umtiti, who arguably is a top five center back in Europe at this moment, which is incredible considering he's only 23. But you also put Aymeric Laporte or Koscielny on the other side of him, and it's magical. I mean, they really have a chance to be a special team.
Yeah.
Similar to how Spain was, obviously, when they won the World Cup in 2010 and kind of had the back-to-back Euros to complement that.
Is Zidane going to headbutt someone in the finals this time?
Zidane will not be out there because he coaches Real Madrid.
Bummer. Okay, so now we're going to transition into, as promised, a Week 5 NFL recap.
Back on solid ground.
Yep. I am back in charted territory here. Just kind of go through some of the big headlines from the week. I would say overall, pretty down week, maybe not the most exciting. We had some good teams on bye. But obviously, the game of the week, hands down, Green Bay at Dallas. That's a big-time game right
there. That is a big-time game. You know, I saw a photo of Dallas Cowboy fans celebrating with 1 minute and 13 seconds
left.
They
had to have known.
You got to know you leave 1 minute and 13 seconds left for Aaron Rodgers.
You've seen it before. You literally saw it, like, you know, a couple months, like 6 to 7 months ago in the playoffs. I thought it was funny how that game, and I'd mentioned this before, if Green Bay had not have made that extra point and they won the game 34-31, I believe that was the same score that they beat Dallas by in that playoff game last year. So I was really rooting for that to happen. It didn't quite happen, but still a demoralizing loss for the Cowboys.
It just solidifies your buddy Aaron Rodgers, you know, place in history.
How impressive was Dak Prescott in this game, though? I mean, his defense gave him no help, and he was just making throw after throw.
Zeke gave him no help either.
And he just looks phenomenal.
Yeah, I've kind of, obviously I'm a Carson Wentz guy, but I think over the past, especially this year, I've kind of swung into Dak is very much so in that upper, knocking on the door, that upper echelon of quarterbacks. I've been extremely impressed. Yeah, even the pick six was not his fault whatsoever.
Off of Terrence Williams' hands. That's...
But, I mean, so think about this. So Dallas lost two home games in a row. Rams, and, you know, not a bad team. Packers, obviously, a pretty good team. They're two games behind those Philadelphia Eagles in that division. Are these losses? I mean, is that, and their schedule is brutal too. They got Falcons still on there. The AFC West team still on there. Is this a playoff team?
It's gonna be close. I don't know if I can, you know, officially say that they're gonna slide into that wild card spot. I don't think that they're gonna win the NFC East. I think that's gonna come down to the Redskins or the Eagles.
So the Eagles have 1.5 games on the Skins. Also, they have a full week and a half, Thursday to Monday, before they play the Redskins at home next game. If the Eagles win that game, I mean, is it locked up maybe?
No, it's not. I'm not going to say that.
No.
You will not hear me say that until week 17 when
wow, it might be clinched in
I will not say it until week 17 when it is done. Yeah. But, you know, I got to give it to you. You know, they did what they had to do. They beat up on a trash team in the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, all the power to you.
Well, I mean, I said this coming into the week. I said it last week that, you know, it's one thing to win games against teams you're better than and to win them close. And that matters. It's the NFL. You got to find ways to win games. But you got to emphatically beat the bad teams. By all accounts, Arizona, pretty bad team.
Really bad team.
They beat up on them. They slaughtered them. It was, I mean, the Cardinals traveling east, tough game. 21-0 in the first quarter. Steve, I know you watched the game. You're generally not super, super high on the Eagles. But any thoughts you had about that game in particular? Maybe you want to pivot to another area of the NFC?
Sure. So the game it reminded me of was Bucks-Bears week 2. And it was just a slaughter and the game was over. And you really, I mean, Carson Wentz made some nice throws throughout the game. But a game like that is just not indicative of a quarterback's overall play. I think the defense played very well. And I think, I mean, Carson did make some good throws, but the game was really wrapped up. And then you're just in run-the-clock-out mode for the remainder of the three quarters. So, I mean, it was impressive, the start they got off to. I'm not taking anything away from that. But I would just say after that, you should be a little hesitant in making judgments.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're gonna see, you know, the real test versus the Panthers. Unfortunately, it's coming on a Thursday night, which, you know, you hate to see that. And Lane Johnson's out. I know you're about to say that.
No. I was going to say this is the best Thursday night football game that's not an opening night game or Thanksgiving game, like
ever. A lot of qualifiers.
Like ever. But
a lot of qualifiers.
But so think about there's like
teams is the best game.
There's like 13 there's like 13 of them a year. And think about like how awful Thursday night games usually are. And they scheduled this.
The game hasn't even
I'm not saying that it's gonna be the greatest Thursday night game of all time. I'm saying that the two teams playing in it is like the best matchup. It's one of the best Thursday night matchups that's not like a Thanksgiving or opening night matchup. Like ever. This is not me just saying this. This is like an all-time great Thursday night matchup.
But it sounds like it's
an all-time great that's a lot to say. There's
like,
no basis to that point.
You can't even name the other Thursday night games for the rest of the year. How are you just going to say that?
I mean, the Bucks-Patriots game
was
an interesting in the sense that you get a very young team in the Bucks going up against Brady and the Patriots who have been struggling.
Chiefs-Raiders is going to be pretty good.
But to say it's one of the greatest games of all time is absurd.
It's greatest. Absurd. It's greatest in its slot. That's what I'm saying. It's looking forward. Steve, we don't talk about the Bucks that often.
Your Bucky's a little shy.
Yeah, so we'll talk about them. So you were actually at the game in Tampa. So a little bit different of a perspective from us watching on TV. Personally, I'm a little disappointed with Jameis. I thought he was going to take a big step forward. He got his yards in that game. And, you know, he's been pretty good this year. And, like, you guys are going to say, oh, this is you just saying this. I think Carson Wentz is on the eclipse. He's eclipsing Jameis Winston at this point. So Tampa, 2-2. Who do they have this week, Steven?
They got the Cardinals.
So they're playing the team that the Eagles just beat, but they play them on the road. How do you feel about that one?
I mean, it'll be interesting to see, obviously, with the Adrian Peterson trade, how they kind of develop their run game because they've had the worst rushing attack in the NFL. And, I mean, AP looks a little washed up, honestly. But, I mean, he could bring some passion and some flair out for him that'll help. But, I mean, Carson Palmer's just looked abysmal.
Yeah, this is a must-win, though.
It absolutely is a must-win. And obviously last year they go out there after beating the Falcons week one and get slaughtered 41-7.
Jameis
threw four picks, two of which were like deflections off his receiver's hands, but it was ugly. Doug Martin got hurt, and that was a really bad look. And you kind of saw something similar this season after the Bucs beat the Bears, and then they go to the Vikings, and Case Keenum lights them up for the third year in a row.
You love to see the Case Keenum annual destroy the Bucks.
I mean, it's a shame, but yeah. It is what it is.
That's a good segue into just talking about week six in general. We're into that mid-October part of the schedule. You really start seeing who are contenders and who are pretenders. Mike, is there any game that sticks out to you? I think an interesting one is that Steelers at the Chiefs in the 4:30 slot, the Romo game. Steelers losing badly at home.
Awful.
To the Jaguars.
They looked horrendous.
Yeah. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger there's another guy. I've been saying it all week that, you know, the Dax and the Carson Wentzes of the world have moved ahead of those 0-4 guys, the Rivers, Eli, and Big Ben.
Here a little bit.
But I'm just saying, I mean, five picks at home, they're usually good.
I am not confident I would say that I would take Carson Wentz.
That's really alarming for the Steelers. It is alarming, but
it's one game. So let's pump the
brakes.
The Jags have the best pass defense in the league. Jalen Ramsey is phenomenal.
Put him alongside AJ Bouye.
Exactly.
That's the two lowest completion percentage when being targeted in the league. 1 and 2.
And Calais Campbell up front, he generates a lot of pressure and helps.
Malik Jackson has all stuff in the run. They got a good defense.
I mean, they just got Blake Bortles at quarterback. That's their main problem.
I mean, hey, if he's just gonna run the ball to Leonard Fournette 19 straight times in the second half or whatever it was.
Yeah. I remember reading something that said no quarterback, which is essentially what the Jags have, and their usage of Blake Bortles is better than a bad quarterback. So they've just completely taken Bortles out of the game.
Smart.
And speaking of the Jags, I think they're kind of in an interesting game this week. We have who would have thought?
Two upcomers.
Week six of 2017, that the Rams at the Jaguars is like somewhat an intriguing game. I think it is.
You've got 2-3-2. When's the last time both of those teams have been above 500 in week five? Forever ago.
I mean, think about just the brand quality of a Rams at Jaguars game, and
it's in the Sunday afternoon time slot.
Nah, but it's in the bad Sunday afternoon.
True.
So it's a local only.
But we're gonna get to see Jared Goff, see how he rebounds from a tough game against
Seattle. He's playing an even better passing defense, according to you guys.
Is this game in the Duval or is it in?
It is in the Duval.
Good stuff.
Yes, but you know, I'm looking forward to the AFC East powerhouse matchup of the New York Jets hosting the New England Patriots. We're going to see
a couple plus 500 over teams over 500 there.
Are the Jets the real deal?
I'm going to go with no. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little bit of a debate. They beat up on some real quality teams. The Browns, the Jaguars, and the Dolphins. But that being said,
Like you got to beat up on the teams that you're supposed to beat up on, right?
Right, but you got to win emphatically. They have
20-0 is pretty emphatic, right?
I think the Dolphins scored. Didn't
20-3. 20-3.
20-3. I think
six.
Yeah, 3 or 6. No touchdowns.
Yikes. So the Jets. You know, home game. That's why I was really thinking if New England had lost to Tampa, you know, that could have been a trap series. Yeah. So that kind of does it for just kind of a quick preview for next week. So that'll bring us right into our All 267. Looking back on last week, not so good for either of us. I picked up a 5-9 record. You know, I thought a lot of the games I picked would have been close. I thought I had a chance. And it really, you know, even looking back over the ones I picked, I don't think I regret anything. It just did not work out. That's how football goes. It's parity. How'd you do, Mike?
I actually, you know, I had thought I went 6-8. Then I remember that the Panthers actually won. So I'm 7-7. And I'm going to take, you know, if I'm going forward at a 500 pace, which I have been for the past, you know, 3 weeks, that's pretty remarkable, by the way. But, you know, I'm going to take that because that's just going to widen my gap on you. I've got a comfy 4-game lead. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So let's go into this week's picks. Steve, you can look over what we have and feel free to chime in. Do you have, Mike, anything for me that's just out of this world bad? I think you do.
I do. I don't know what 5 weeks ago me was thinking, but I have the Browns riding strong into Houston and beating up on the Texans.
Not good.
I'm gonna come out and say that it's not good. It's bad.
No bueno. Also, can we do a little rewind to last week where you said that the Panthers winning at the Lions was a worse pick than the Cardinals winning at the Eagles? Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
How that was garbage. Remains to be garbage. I will call you out on that because you know it too.
I don't.
It's pure bias. Your points were off. It was like 20 plus 27 for the Eagles, minus 3-6, whatever.
You know, sometimes just, the cards don't fall your way, but
I'm not, the Cardinals.
I'm not gonna go back. Like you're not gonna go back and look at some of the picks you made. I'm not gonna go back and say that my pick was wrong.
But it wasn't like looking back at your pick. It was like you going into last week knew that it was a bad pick. And you just didn't want to say it.
I don't think it was a bad pick. So.
It was a bad pick. I mean, that's the game.
Everything's a bad pick in hindsight if it doesn't.
Hey, I got good hindsight vision, but I also had good foresight on that one that the Eagles were going to do away with Arizona, which they really did. So for me this week, I'm not liking, and I have a defense for this. I have the Colts winning at Tennessee. Mariota's game time decision. Jacoby Brissett's actually been playing pretty well.
That's a trash pick.
It isn't a good pick.
But you didn't know that.
But I was assuming Andrew Luck would be playing. I that's my play. Thank you, Steve.
I told you he wasn't going
to
be playing.
I thought Andrew Luck was going to be back.
Are you a medical doctor?
I am.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so I don't feel good about that one. But again, I think I have a loaded week coming.
16-0?
So we're going to hold off on that.
Like 2 weeks ago?
So we have the same picks.
That
except
Cardinals pick's a little questionable.
Okay, you know what? I don't like that pick.
Vaughn and Levante are back this week.
Yeah, I don't like that one at all. But otherwise, we have the same picks, except you have the Titans, you have the Browns against the Texans.
And the Bucks.
And then you have the Bucks and the Rams, where I took the home teams there. So Jacksonville against the Rams and then Cardinals against the Bucks.
There's not going to be much difference going into next week.
Yeah, we'll see. Those couple games, I'd say they generally lean in your favor, besides that Browns
game. Besides that Browns game. But yeah. Hey. Who knows? Kevin Hogan went 14-for-19 with two touchdowns in the first half.
You're going to build that lead.
What a player.
All right. So, like I said, short and sweet this week. Will, do we have a score update for the Indians-Yankees game? I think it's still going on.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's an interesting series, man. The Yankees came back. They blew game two. But here they go. So it's 3-2 right now. So next week we'll go and recap probably what's happened in baseball so far. So Steve, thank you for joining us, talking some soccer.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we can't do that with just me and Mike here because I'm a liability.
Yeah, very big
when it comes to that sport. But we are happy to have you on.
A probable future sacrifice.
Yep, that's exactly. So we will see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows. Football, tennis, hockey, golf.